Places podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. Adam Murray, I'm just going to throw you in here now, just get you in the ring. It's here. The playoffs are here. Now, I know that some of these first-round matchups are not the most sexiest, but, I mean, we actually have postseason basketball. We have games that actually matter in the NBA, Adam.
Well, it's finally, it's time. We've gotten rid of all of the garbage tanking teams.
Or is it time?
It's Vader.
You know,
time.
Some of these. You know, here's the truth. Some of these lower end teams, like, there's a very unrealistic chance that they'll probably even win the series. But you know, you do have those surprises. Some people said that about New Orleans last year when they played Portland. I mean, New Orleans like swept them pretty easily. So you never know. Sometimes. Do you see that this year? Before we really give it away, because we're doing one conference right now. Like, is there one where you're really staring it down? Even if you want to talk about the West, like, is there one that you're looking at saying?
Well, let's just talk about the East real quick. The East could be defined with one word: inexperience.
LeBron. That's two words, but okay.
Inexperience is two words?
No, LeBron is two words, you dummy. I totally overstepped what you said, because no LeBron is much more important than inexperience in this case.
No, inexperience is more important because none of these teams have been to a finals. The only
that's true.
Milwaukee hasn't won a playoff series since 2001, maybe? And you know, none of these kids have been in it. And Toronto, the only team to make it far, is a two completely new look team with Kawhi as opposed to DeRozan.
You don't know if you're going to have that kind of same Toronto team, but we'll get to them in a second. Keep going. You're on a roll.
You have the Celtics with Kyrie. You have Orlando, who isn't tanking for once.
They're literally the definition of average.
Brooklyn is just the overachieving feel-good story of those the kids finally made it, and then Detroit's just like, oh, well, we need an eighth team. But this is just a team – nobody has garnered any respect so far, because it was just LeBron's domination 8 years in a row.
Okay, now you're coming around to the right track. Like, what I just always go back to is just the macro sense of, like, there's no LeBron James. So, I mean, let's be realistic, Adam. Like, I was a little higher on Cleveland going into the season than you were. But let's be realistic. I think everybody knew that once LeBron left for the Lakers, that we were going to have a new Eastern Conference champion. We were going to have a new team from the East that did not involve LeBron James in the NBA Finals. The Cleveland Cavaliers making it, or the Miami Heat even making it, was probably unlikely. Now, the Miami Heat did not make the playoffs. Just a quick aside, you think Eric Spoelstra is in trouble?
No. We'll get to that when we get to Gone Fishing again. But
okay,
with the beginning of the season, it was Boston's season to lose, and then Toronto re-upped, and then Milwaukee re-upped, and then Philly upped, and Boston just sort of faltered due to chemistry issues, which sort of has been a theme all year long. And, you know, all doesn't matter because most players don't care about regular season to begin with. So now, officially, you know, it's the old, you know, call it the old Celtics mentality of, you know, we don't care where we play. We'll just coast to the four seed and then turn it on. So let's start with that one. That's probably the most compelling, probably the closest series.
Maybe. The Boston-Indiana series
Boston,
is what
Indiana,
you're talking about.
Boston and overachieving Indiana without a star. What do you got?
Okay. Well, let's kind of just get to the skinny of it with Boston. The first thing out is that you don't want to try to paint a picture like Boston was like a bad team, or they were, you know, some people would call them an underachieving team that had chemistry issues. But there were moments with the Celtics, even when they were struggling, where you could see that light flip on. I mean, everybody knows about their history with the fact that they always give the business to Philadelphia. So there's always that sense of, oh, well, if they wind up playing the Sixers, they're already in their heads. And, you know, the Bucks are, like you mentioned, an experience that some of these other teams just might not have the kind of know-how on closing out series the way that Boston does, because Boston's gone to the Eastern Conference Finals the last 2 years. That's easy to forget. You know, in all the LeBron mess from the last 5 or 6 years is that, you know, the Boston Celtics have been in the Eastern Conference Finals each year. This would be their third year in a row if they made it. Now, is the deck a little bit more stacked against them than you anticipated? Yes. And that's Would you say, Adam, that some of that is of their own fault, or do you think that
self-inflicted?
Okay, that's what I was about to say. Do you think there were some things that were beyond their control, like trying to reintroduce Gordon Hayward into the mix, and some of the chemistry issues didn't work, and you know the injuries to Al Horford throughout the season?
None of the chemistry issues worked. They didn't lose any major piece or even, you know, peripheral piece of their rotation last year. In fact, they gained Hayward, and by doing so, they just somehow killed their chemistry. Kyrie, it was his time to become a leader. Oh, I don't want to be a leader. I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be in the limelight. Well, didn't you just star in a movie? You know, this is what you said you wanted. Mm-hmm. Okay, you got it. Well, okay, you can't lead. And then everything just sort of got weird the whole season.
I think the one part with the Celtics that I immediately look at when I look at the, because we're not going to gaze too much over the stats, the team stats, is that their defensive rating was not as good as you would anticipate it. And that shows a lack of effort. Would you agree?
Yeah, and they looked like they had no heart.
Seventh in rating is good. Seventh in rating, eighth in points allowed is good. That means you're an elite defense in the NBA today. But and then their field goal percentage defense is high. They defend the three well. But then offensively, it's just so blah. You know, they're much more efficient than they are actually scoring points, which means that they could probably slow teams down without too much of a problem. I mean, do you feel like – I know the pace of most games kind of escapes people because in the NBA because, you know, scoring is just absolutely taken like an avalanche in the last in the last couple of years. But do you feel like the Celtics are sort of a team that would rather play a playoff format or a playoff type of intensity where possessions are limited and games slow down?
Yeah, I think they would, because just going for the regular season, they had that we don't care if we win or lose. We can go out, we can lose to Golden State by two, or you know we can beat Houston, or we can beat Denver, but then we'll go out and lose to Orlando by 25 or Brooklyn.
Now, there's two sides to the coin with the Indiana Pacers, who are going to be their opponents. Now, there was the fact that I think I don't want to say that they were deadlocked. That'd be hard to say because it was always fluid until maybe the last week of the regular season. But I think it was one of those things where you kind of knew that those two were probably going to play each other. What we weren't sure about until just kind of a string of wins and losses for the teams was that which one was going to have the home court advantage. The Celtics got it. So they're going to be able to host games one and two. Obviously, the Pacers are not going to be having Victor Oladipo. He's still out with that injury. I mean, let's just get this out of the way. I'm sure there's some kind of like a roster thing that's already finalized this. Any possibility, even remotely, that Victor Oladipo pulls a Willis Reed?
No, he's out for...
Well, he practices. You know, he runs.
Non-contact drills.
I know. Well, I mean, this happened last year on the other side last year with Gordon Hayward. Remember when he was running?
Yeah.
And everyone's like, Hayward might play, you know?
Yeah, and then it was just like, then you watch him come back this year and like, oh, maybe... Yeah, that's not good.
Okay, now before Victor Oladipo's injury, they were on a roll. I mean, absolutely on a tear. They were on pace to probably win about maybe 55 games. The injury obviously curtailed them. Their net rating was definitely down on defense and offense compared to how they were before Oladipo. They did make a decent move getting Wesley Matthews to basically plug in that small forward / guard role. The leading scorer is Bojan Bogdanovic. A lot of improved play from Domantas Sabonis. I love Miles Turner. I think you do too. But do you feel like there's a little bit too much to have to face off against? It is weird to see a Boston Celtics team that's just more talented than their opponent, because with Brad Stevens' teams, it's always been the other way where they had to overachieve. How do you feel about this one?
Well, it's just there is no superstar. There is nothing. This team has overachieved with nothing. It's just, you know, look at their roster. It's like
looking in the mirror for Stevens, you know?
You know, who bounces out? You're like, oh man, this is the one we need to stop. They're all just sort of like, eh. They're all second and third options, and somehow
it's a great defense though. I'm talking about Indiana. They were first in points allowed and third in rating. So
yeah, but
that
only works for so long. And once, you know, in the playoffs, weaknesses get exposed, and a lack of a superstar and a lack of a go-to guy will hurt them in the fourth quarter.
Their three-point shooting is very good. The problem is they don't take many of them. That's the biggest issue with the Pacers.
The thing with the Pacers is there's no closeout guy,
mm-hmm.
I think. So I think, you know, with the strange injury to Marcus Smart, who's just,
it's an oblique injury. He's out for likely the first two rounds of the playoffs at the
and just like, this weird minimum. Non-contact. He falls down and, you know, gets to be escorted out, and it's like, ugh, that's not good. But I will say Celtics in six.
Okay, well, let's just get some particulars, because I actually agree with that, just to get it out of the way so we can move on after this. The reason why I say six games is that I think there is some resolve for Nate McMillan's team, the Pacers, and I do think that the Celtics are going to have a couple of hiccups where there might be one where in crunch time they just don't finish it off, or they trail most of the game and then they come back in the fourth quarter and then they just can't hold it because the Pacers make a push in Indiana. Like, I can see a situation where it's tied at 2-2. You know what I'm saying? Like, it would not be impossible to me. What I'm kind of curious about now, Boston does have the reinforcements with guys like Jaylen Brown and even Semi Ojeleye, and then the backup point guard is Terry Rozier. How do you think they're going to handle the Marcus Smart injury? Like, I think Smart was probably going to be winding up guarding either Matthews a lot or Bogdanovich a lot. Like, what do you think they're going to do there?
They're just going to have to do a lot of team defense. There's going to, you know, that's going to hurt them a lot.
Do you think we'll see a lot of Semi Ojeleye?
No.
We're going to have to see a lot of Daniel Tice just because of the fact that Turner's going to be out there at the same time as Sabonis. Like, you're going to have to go with that two big set. Now, we know this. You and I have talked about this for probably since we started the show, that the Celtics just do not rebound the ball well. You know, and that's just something that might come back to haunt them.
No,
but
it's one and done. They need to hit the boards hard and, you know, just make your shots. It's either one of the two. And basically, the key is going to come down to Al Horford. Al Horford is vastly underrated on this team. And
he was fantastic in the playoffs last year, too.
Yeah, and he's going to have to stretch out Turner and Sabonis, and he'll have to play down low and you know, get some rebounds, because if they're going to do anything. But no, I think Celtics in a solid six.
I'll tell you one sneaky matchup, Tyreek Evans versus Terry Rozier. You know, remember we had that issue last year where Terry Rozier played against Eric Bledsoe, and he clowned Bledsoe a couple times to the point where, like, Bledsoe refused to even acknowledge him. Like, now listen, Kyrie was out, Gordon Hayward was out. There was a lot of situations there where they had to call upon reserves. And, like, we even saw a lot of games where Semi Ojeleye played more minutes than he probably should have. Now, I know they're basically in full force other than the Smart injury and also the fact that Horford has had some injuries in the regular season. But they're going to be pretty much loaded. So do you think that there's going to be anything different to their style of play? Do you think that there's any similarities from what you saw out of Boston last year?
No, they're just going to have to, you know, let Kyrie get his mojo going and let him be happy. And it seems like when he's happy, the team's happy. So
last point, the Indiana Pacers got really, really close against the Cavaliers and lost. Do you think that experience factor will help them here?
No, Oladipo got close and lost because Oladipo had every shot in the fourth quarter of that final game.
So you're just crapping all over Oladipo's teammates. That's really classy of you, Adam.
But they've been playing middling basketball since his injury.
Too. I mentioned how the Celtics have sort of been a bugaboo for Philadelphia, the 76ers. You know, they're called the Philadelphia 76ers, right? Do you call them the 76ers or the Sixers? Like, what always kind of like Freudian slips out of you when you talk about Philadelphia?
It's usually the Sixers.
I mean, I think they even struggle with it with their jerseys. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. They're playing the Brooklyn Nets. The Brooklyn Nets, Adam.
The feel-good story of the year, they had this strategy just going back. Look, we want to play a fast Golden State-Houston style. We know we don't have shooters. We can't pull it off, but this is the style we want to play. And once we have the players to put in, they're already going to buy into the system because we've been doing it. We're not going to keep changing it around. And credit to just Kenny Atkinson and just the front office there.
Sean Marks
for just putting it together, and every player really buying into it.
It's a team that's sort of like put together with crazy glue and you know, and sticks, but like they kind of figured out their how to make the best out of what they have. Like, D'Angelo Russell was an all-star. Ed Davis gave him some good play. Spencer Dinwiddie, what's the status on his health right now? That's a big that is a huge portion to what makes Brooklyn good when they have Dinwiddie.
Spencer Dinwiddie is back.
Okay. And I mean, now if he can play at like max level with D'Angelo Russell, maybe they'll give Philly some trouble. I don't think so. I mean, I'll just give it away now. I think the Sixers are going to sweep them. But I think Brooklyn will give them some. Okay.
It's going to be feisty because you have to, you know, Jared Dudley, playoff experience. Mm-hmm. Ed Davis, playoff experience. Yeah. Damari Carroll, playoff experience. These aren't just, you know, the ragtag of kids coming in. You have people who are hungry and have been the laughingstock, and now all of a sudden they're going to – I'm not going to say they're going to win, but I wouldn't be surprised if this stretches out to 5-6 games.
And, you know, sometimes breaking in like that, it's not necessarily a criticism. Sometimes you get, like, amazing play out of players because this is their first playoff – you know, this is their first – taste of the postseason. You know, I remember a couple of years ago with Greg Monroe when he was playing for the Bucks, played great. It was his first playoff series.
It's the first place. What do they have to lose? You have Philly like, oh man, we're gonna go far. We have to save something for Toronto in round two. Oh man, if we get through Toronto, we gotta go through Boston or Brooklyn. I mean Boston or Milwaukee. And then, you know, you have Russell and LeVert and Allen.
I love Jared Allen. I think he's got a bright future.
They got nothing to lose. They're just going to come and be like, yo, we're
– Oh, that I agree with. That I 100% agree with. And it has nothing to do with cap space available in the summer. And that's not what it is. They're playing with house money. Like, if they get swept by the Sixers, it's like – oh, well, we kind of expected that. If they go 6 games or 7 games with the Sixers, there's going to be almost that same vibe that the Pacers got last year. Like, oh, this is a team on the rise, and that's going to be the storyline going into the summer for the Nets. You know, and then maybe they can attract a free agent from there. But the one thing I'll say, you know, with Orlando, not to skip ahead, but like I feel like Orlando is like the definition of an average team. Brooklyn is like – I don't want to call them like below average or above average, but they're interesting because their offense is much
fun to watch.
Yeah, when they make those when they made those comebacks in the regular season, it was enjoyable because it was like they would get down so deep and come back. It was crazy.
Like even when they were bad, like we kept saying, like they're still a hard out. Like they're still playing to the end. They're not phoning it in at three quarters and okay, let's go home. They kept it playing. So like I said, this is going to be probably the first round, probably the most fun to watch.
But there's a reason why we think they're going to lose. Philadelphia. Do you think they're all in? Let's just get it out of the way.
You got Butler. You got Harris. Neither of them are guaranteed to come back.
J.J. Redick, I think this is his last good year as an NBA starter.
Yeah, he's on a one-year deal again, I think, too. So you got Ben Simmons. You got Embiid. They're going to play Embiid. They're going to run the wheels off him.
Mm-hmm.
They gutted their bench for this team. You know, McConnell, he overachieved in the playoffs last year. Other than that, you got, you know, Mike Scott and –
Yeah, the only thing about that starting lineup, sorry to cut you off, the only thing about that starting lineup that I'll say for Philly that will, I mean, obviously they're going to be able to beat pretty much all starting fives except for maybe like two or three teams in the NBA. But the thing that works to their advantage against Brooklyn, despite the fact that Brooklyn is a very deep team that plays a lot of bench guys, is that they don't really have the type of personnel by position to really overtake Philadelphia. Does that make sense? Like, Philly is better than them at pretty much every position, including center.
Pretty much.
That's the one thing that you worry about with Brooklyn.
Philly is built for all in, but Philly is built, like I said, they're built to let's be reserved, whereas Brooklyn, like I said, is just go all out, punch him in the face.
Well, that's the problem. If you go come out reserved, you lose game one at home, you know, and then you're in trouble. I'm not saying that's going to happen with the Sixers, but things crazier has happened. You know, we saw one where the Celtics were one seed, and they lost their first two games at home because they just
kind of first two at home, and then they won the first two on the road. It's like, well, this doesn't make any sense.
They just came out very lax, you know, and that does happen sometimes, you know. But you know, the thing about Brooklyn, like I said, the style is it's much more one dimensional than some other teams that might be in the playoffs that aren't as interesting. And Philadelphia is just in that position I don't want to go all the way out and say that they're not going to be able to contend for a title after this year. But, you know, unless they make a couple of moves in the summer, if they lose Butler or Harris or both, and they fill those spots in with other good players. But the thing is, like, this is a really good chance for them to win the Eastern Conference. You want to make a good first impression.
Yep, they're all in for this year. And, again, Philly 5 or 6.
Yeah, I actually think Philly's going to sweep them. I don't see Brooklyn even getting one out of there. I think the fact that, you know, I know there's some worry with Embiid with his knee sometimes, but the thing with Embiid and Simmons is that I think they can just kind of wreak havoc on Brooklyn's defense, unless Jared Allen just absolutely comes alive with the shot blocking. That would be the only thing.
We'll be back let's talk after about this break.
Okay.
We have breaks now.
All right, here. I'll just shut up while you do it.
You see, you know, doing live reads, which you've never done, you just read it. They give you the promo copy, you talk about it, you go back and forth, you mention things like the pop feed is coming up. You mention things like Stephen Kelly on Songs with Friends. They're joined by Jason Sherman. They talk about Bush. Not the beans, not the president, the band.
I like Bush.
The band, right?
Yeah, the band's okay. The band's okay. You know, the band's okay.
Greg and Nick are also here with Longbook Hunter's edition of the Hard Traveling Fanboys.
Yeah, those are good people. Those are good people.
They're exploring Shazam with Shaquille O'Neal.
Well, I mean, Shazam's in. You know, Shazam's in because that's actually a DC movie that people actually like. It's a rare bird.
Yep, Shazam, the Monster Society of Evil, and check out their third anniversary special with the essential Jim Ross?
All Elite Wrestling's Jim Ross.
Andrew and Adam, NBA team. They're not terrible.
Yeah, is this like a Being John Malkovich thing where we're plugging the show that we're doing?
The Marvel Age crew are also here and moving into the first half of 1970. And Jenny and Tim, welcome Jen Butler to the hot and high seat for this month's Talk and Pop.
It's Glenn Butler. you said Jen Butler.
Jenny and Tim, welcome Jen Butler. Combination of both, why not?
Correct.
Oh, and Geek and Sassy wouldn't let award season come to an end without the second annual Sassies. Check out what Jenny and Miranda's fans had to say about officially put a bow on 2018. That's right, we put a bow on 2018 in the middle of April.
I did a show with Jen and Miranda, and they were very nice guests to have when I was on one of Jason Sherman's shows. So
they're two cool people. Wonderful ladies. All those shows are good, except for the NBA team.
We're terrible. We're the redheaded stepchildren of the PB. I think we're the oldest one, though, unless top beer is going on. I mean, Greg and Nick have been going forever with the, you know, Hard Traveling Fanboys, but Longbook Hunters has been going a little shorter than that. But no, yeah, a lot of Place to Be Nation, PTBN Pop. Check it out. Well, let's talk about the Toronto Raptors. You know, the We the North, it's always there. You know, we still, even if they won game one against the Washington Wizards last year in the first round, there's still that what do they call that thing? What's that thing that they have? PTSD, is that what they call it?
Yeah, but LeBron PTSD is over. This is a completely
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the first round jitters. Do you think that Toronto will have that case again? Because every year it's like, oh, here we go again. Lowry is falling apart. I do know DeRozan played on that team, so it's kind of different structure. Do you feel like that's the difference?
This team is a completely – this is a different era.
Do you think the level of opponent they're playing against in the first round influences that in Orlando?
This is a nice, easy, breezy first round, I think, for them. You have your opinion of Orlando.
I think Orlando, like I mentioned before this, like I think they're average. The one thing I will say about Orlando is that for them to even be average is an incredible compliment for that team and that organization, because that team has been like unobstructively bad for so long. Like, when was the last time they were good? Like 2012 when Stan Van Gundy coached them?
The Dwight Howard era, because then they gutted that, and they got, you know, the Tobias Harris.
And that was the Hennigan era, and that was a disaster.
Failed miserably, and they haven't done anything since Dwight Howard, and it's just more of a, you know, congratulations.
They haven't even been like an April or March tease. Like, usually by that point, they're done. This year they were in the hunt the whole way through until they rattled off some wins late in the season, and it was starting to become a little more clear that they were probably going to make the playoffs, which they did, and good for them. Not only that, they were a 7th seed. They weren't even like an 8th seed. The source of that success, I would probably put a lot of it on Nikola Vucevic, who was an all-star. But even Fournier played well. I know you're not the biggest Terrence Ross fan. We've joked about him forever. But he actually had a very good year.
He was fine as a 6th, 7th man. He never became a starter, but he was who he was.
Yeah.
So the question here is, you mentioned Vucevic. That's pretty much Orlando's team.
Aaron Gordon's good, too.
Yeah. He's good, but he didn't take it over as we thought he would.
Yeah. The biggest thing too with Orlando, not many injuries. They're pretty much stacked. Now when I say stacked, I don't mean it in the way of like Boston, say, like, or the Warriors, like, oh man, look at all this talent. Basically, it's all hands on deck for Orlando. What you got is what you got. They don't have a great bench. You know, like, you gotta dip in and do guys like bringing guys like Wes Iwundu and Jerry and Grant, and losing Mo Bamba. I know people kind of chuckle at this, but losing Mo Bamba midway through was actually a bad thing for them because he was a good backup center for them. And it means you have to rely a little too much on guys like Jarrell Martin and Kem Birch and Jonathan Isaac. And I'm sure Jonathan Isaac's got a good future for himself, but you would have liked to have some reinforcements, and Orlando absolutely does not. Like, this is a team that just cannot afford to risk an injury from their starters in the playoffs. That would be absolute death for them.
They got hot at the right time when they made their way into the playoffs. Let's just wrap this up simply. Is this not a sweep?
I do think it's a sweep. I hate to say this about these Eastern Conference playoffs, like it's like so boring and why are we even talking about any of this? But I don't see Orlando winning one here.
This is round one. We're allowed to have this in round one.
Who does Kawhi Leonard guard?
He can guard everybody.
I get that, but who are they gonna stick on him?
They're probably gonna put him on Vucevic.
Okay. Vucevic, a big man, against a small forward, the Claw.
They're not going to put him on Terrence Ross. They're going to have, you know, I think, you know, they're probably going to play small ball. Aaron Gordon maybe shut him down.
How impactful is the OG Anunoby injury?
Not necessarily terrible because benches get really short really fast in the playoffs. So.
And they have Marcus Gasol. So, and I know that Anunoby and Marcus Gasol don't play the same position, but Gasol, I feel like, has been sort of waiting in the wings since they got him in the trade. I don't feel like they've really maxed him out yet. They've been waiting for the playoffs to really unleash him.
He's been resting up.
Yeah, Jeremy Lin's actually been good for them as like a backup point guard, or you can even call him a third string point guard behind Fred VanVleet. Danny Green, you know, there's still a little bit left there. You know, that accelerator can rev up every now and then. He has some of those 30-point games where he just can't miss from the 3-point line. You know, Nick Nurse coaches the team now instead of Dwayne Casey. I mean, I don't want to pile all of it on Casey and DeRozan being changed over. I mean, do you want to go there with the Raptors, or do you feel like there was more to it than that?
Nope. Straight sweep. I think we can wrap this up in a nice bow. And speaking of sweeps, Milwaukee also has a 4-game exhibition match.
Oh, you have no confidence in the Detroit Pistons, do you?
Nobody has any confidence in the Detroit Pistons.
What about the vengeance factor from the departed Milwaukee Buck Thon Maker?
He's, what, all his 13 minutes he gets?
19 and a half. But the thing is, like, you know, the only thing that I think Detroit does have sort of in their favor is that Milwaukee is going through some injuries. Malcolm Brogdon's out. Tony Snell has some injuries. Nikola Mirotic, he should be ready, but he's not completely ready. We don't even know if Pau Gasol is going to be able to play. Is there a confirmation on that or not?
Even if he did, what is he going to provide?
A big, so that they can fight Andre Drummond off. So what do you want? You want Brook Lopez to basically get eaten alive inside?
You got Griffin and Drummond, but who's going to stop Giannis?
Unfreaking godly.
I told you this at the beginning of the season, And you didn't believe me.
Well, do you, I mean, I don't think all of it was Budenholzer, but I think like I was trying to sort of sidestep some of the changes that Toronto had of why I feel a little bit different about their progress versus when they had Dwayne Casey and, you know, DeMar DeRozan and company. But I do feel like having Budenholzer was the difference for Milwaukee. You know, they had an actual system in place. They threes because that's what Bud likes to do, and that sort of went to their offense improving. When you're, and this is the new trend, when you're a really good team, regardless of where you are, people kind of jump on your bandwagon. So they were able to make those kind of late buyout pickups like Gasol and Mirotić and help me out. George Hill was another one that they got early in the season. Like you're able to get these players that you're not necessarily able to get before the season starts because no one knows how good you are yet. Once the secret's out and you might be able to contend, you load up.
Yeah, they stole Mirotić, and they just got, you know, everybody's re-upping. They somehow kept just matching them player for player with everybody who comes in. It's just like, damn, they just sneakily came in and did it. So
now they did have to make some sneaky moves to make room for some of those people. Like they had to dump Thon Maker. They had to dump John Henson. Ersan Ilyasov has been good for them. Brook Lopez has had a very good year. He has become the Kyle Korver of big men.
Yeah, he's had a good year. But again, let's just – why are we –
Because Dwayne Casey coaches the Pistons, so you know, you're going to have a little bit of revenge in their mind because everybody thinks that Dwayne Casey's a playoff coach.
Yeah, but – this, how does it not go four games?
I think Detroit will get one in Detroit. I think they'll sneak one out. Blair Griffin have like a really like a great game, like a 3-point type of game.
All right, but either way, like I said, just you know, this is round one. We all know these aren't the most exciting matchups, especially this year. But round two and forward, the East is going to be very competitive. So,
I think it really depends on how Boston does with Indiana. If Boston bounces in the first round, it'll be more fascinating for people because people aren't sure what to make of it if Indiana moves on. But if Boston moves on and they play the Bucks, now we're talking. Now it gets interesting.
All right.
Let's finish this up. On behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reese. We'll be back with the Western Conference preview.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 2 dozen podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. The Place to Be Nation wrestling feed. We dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.